There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sarah Wilson, and this is Wild, a show where we talk with the biggest minds in the world about the ideas that can help us love and save our one wild and precious life together on this planet.
Welcome, everyone, to another Wild Ask Me Anything mini podcast. With this week's Ask Me Anything, which is being published a little late, I'm sorry about that. I've had a few things going on. We're going to do something a little bit more every day. There's a lot going on in the world, and so I thought I'd keep things a little simple this week and a little bit meta, not in the Mark Zuckerberg sense of the word. So Kai Akita from my Substack community, she's a very regular participant in the community. She sent in the question last week asking if I would talk here on Wild, on the Wild podcast, about how I do Wild, as in the podcast, so the mechanics of things. And I figured it's something that a lot of people are interested in, whether you're wanting to start your own podcast or you're just intrigued how it all works. I remember listening to Tim Ferriss doing one along these lines, and I loved it. It's a little bit like a few years ago, we all took to reading blogs about how writers went about writing, so the writing habits of writers, and we were all obsessed. There was countless blogs and also books on the subject. So we might get a little bit granular. Start off with, I use Riverside. It's an app that I find a bit clunky. It takes up a lot of internet, and it requires using Chrome, which a lot of my guests don't like using. There's often a delay as well if one of us has slow internet, which seems to be a curse that follows me around the planet. And that does mean that it drops out, and also there's often a delay. So I find it so frustrating, because when there is a delay, it's almost impossible to know when to interrupt your guest and to show enthusiasm or to add a follow-up question. It's clunky. What else? I use this microphone. If you're watching the video, you can see that it's a Rode microphone. It's a rectangle. It's super heavy. I've got two of them because often when I'm traveling, I'll be doing an IRL interview and I need two microphones. When I'm traveling carry-on, which is most of the time, it's a bit of a problem because they're so heavy. So I put them in my pockets. I've even worn them in jeans pockets before. Okay, so that's sort of my equipment, and then just basic headphones. It's pretty simple. I've been known to do podcasts in cupboards, in Airbnbs when there's noise outside, under a doona or a duvet, again, to kind of cushion background noise. Then I gave up on all of that and just figured most of you are just kind of okay with echoes and background noises. Here in Paris, invariably there is just the sound of a siren. It's the background to Paris. I've also done one recently in a camper van, parked illegally in sweltering heat. Like, halfway through the interview, I had to take off my top and my shorts, and there were people knocking on the door. That's a bit of a roundup of my setup. It's very, very unprofessional. I'm not an expert at this at all. In fact, I'm not a natural podcast host, I don't think. I'm much better at being a guest. I'm more agile in the moment. I like thinking on the spot. I like attending to what people ask me. So I guess this Ask Me Anything format, goes well for me, I suppose. Yeah, as a host, I tend to over-research. I go down rabbit holes. I always feel that I'm not quite ready enough for the guest. I tend to get super, super interested in their work. I'll read their book. I'll listen to several podcasts that they've done with other guests. Let me see. I'll look at their website and just have a look to see, you know, what they've wanted to flag. You know, you often get a few clues as to what they're interested in that way. What else? Invariably I have imposter syndrome in and around podcasting. I saw a meme this morning, though. It said an app for people with imposter syndrome who can, I think, pass on their vibes to, you know, these terrible leaders that we've got at the moment. I'm paraphrasing that terribly. Anyway, Kai asked a bunch of questions that are quite specific. So I'll go through each of them and answer them on the spot. So how do you go about choosing your guests? Do some people request to be on your show? And also she asks if I pay guests to come on the show. All right. So I never pay, ever, ever, nor do guests pay me. But I know that there are some podcasts out there where both do happen. So there are some podcasts that, you know, are all about interviewing business coaches and CEOs, and these CEOs will pay to be on the podcast. I don't do anything like that. I generally send out an email flagging my interest in the work. I flag my aim with the podcast, and that generally gets me across the line with the guests that I have on the show. And I'll also list other guests that have been on there that are like-minded. So I will do research to see. So I'll go on to Instagram to see if this guest I'd like to have on the program follows any of the other guests I've had on the program, and so on and so forth. Or I'll do a Google search where I put those two names in or something, just to make that connection. I generally have a list of about 20 people that I am fascinated by, where I've read their book, I've read an article that they've written, an essay that they might have written. I'll top that list up on a regular basis. And so I have this wonderful woman called Liana who works remotely for me, and she goes through that list and she sends out the emails on my behalf asking these guests to be involved. Invariably, we have to go to a publicist. So they've written a book, it'll go through a book publisher. And a book publisher will generally provide budget for this kind of thing for about 2 to 4 weeks after the publication of a book. So if you can get in there in that time, you might be slotted into the Australian media sort of lineup. What else? So it'll be a book. They will have said something in an article that I've loved. They may be somebody in one of my books and I want to follow up on an idea, or it's just someone I'm obsessed with. So Sheena Iyengar would be an example of that. I read her book many years ago. She's the blind academic who essentially came up with that whole art of choosing, the paradox of choice theory and research. She's the original researcher in that space, and I just loved her work. And I was fascinated by the idea that she was fully blind and she did all this research. Like, I struggled to write a book with albeit shonky eyesight, but yes, still functioning to a certain extent. Sister Helen Prejean, who wrote Dead Man Walking, and Susan Sarandon plays her in the movie. I was obsessed by her. I've always been obsessed by Death Row and also by nuns. So the combination was potent there. And she was somebody who was just a wonderful, wonderful guest and super enthusiastic. And I'll put that episode in the show notes below so you can listen to that if you haven't already. I tend to rotate between issues. Climate, AI, heavy stuff, but then some more beautiful upliftings, philosophy about how to live a better life. I try to have some kind of proportional representation of people on the planet. So I've had quite a number of Indigenous people. And I probably have guests, you know, 50-50 male-female ratio. Interestingly, women, the female guests, do better, get a lot more downloads. Another interesting fact for you, we generally find, well, the stats show that male podcasters tend to have 10 to 20% female guests on their podcasts, which is quite horrible. Reflects very much men's reading patterns as well. So men tend to read, 90% of the books they read are by male writers and 10 to 20% are female writers, whereas for women it's 60% female, 40% male. Okay, so I'll also then make sure that the guest speaks to a wild idea. They must have a wild idea. I don't just, you know, they must have contributed something. The fact that they might be fun and famous and in the public eye is not enough for me. So I always put myself in the shoes of the person scrolling through the latest apps, you know, in their app, and what words in the descriptor might grab them, you know. So I'm always doing that. I do that with my writing when I'm writing books. When I was a magazine editor, I actually imagine myself naively for the first time looking at something. I also put my magazine editor hat on to the extent that I ask, how does this thing, this topic, this conversation, how's it going to help me with my life? And I go from there. So I progress ideas as I go. The meta crisis is one thing that's been progressing. Civilizational collapse, another one. It requires a crescendo, I guess. I am increasingly aware of serving the community as well, giving the stuff across that maybe doesn't render me very popular with advertisers. We might get to that because I think Kai asks a question to that extent. Okay, so let me see. What's the next question? Oh, yes, and do any of these people approach me? Yes, that does happen. And quite often it's from very considered older people, like people who are awesome and have had 50-year careers, and they'll write me a very polite email asking if I'd be interested in having them on the podcast. So the head of PETA, the animal rights organisation, Ingrid Newkirk, she reached out to me and said that she'd been listening to my podcast and would like to appear on it, which was wonderful. Interesting given that I'm not a vegan or a vegetarian. E. Jean Carroll, who is the woman who sued Trump for that sexual harassment instance, and I think she's still back in court with him again. She's that advice columnist, and again, she emailed me as well. So I'm hoping to have her on the show soon. We've lost touch a little bit. The philosopher Alain de Botton recently reached out, and I'll be interviewing him when I'm in London soon. And Paul Hawken, who is an upcoming guest, he also emailed me. He listens to the podcast and wrote to me to congratulate me on the podcast. And I said, well, why don't you come on it? I'd actually tried to get him on it about a year previously. Okay, next question. What is the process of your research and planning before you interview someone? Do you plan all your questions ahead of time, or do you go with the flow of the conversation? Perhaps pulse in between the two. Do you get nervous? Yes, I get nervous always, always. I sort of don't trust myself if I don't get nervous. And are there questions you want to ask but refrain from asking? Okay, so the research, I think I've covered that off. I read the book. I listen to other podcasts that they've done. I plan, yes. So I plan a flow of questions according to how I think the listener is going to need the complex topic sort of explained to them step by step. Now, what often happens is a guest who's an expert in a field and has been talking about their subject forever, they'll just go into this comprehensive overview and it will jump ahead without enough explainers. So often before I hit record, I say, hey, listen, bear with me. We're going to go step by step and so we can break it down for the listener. It doesn't always go to plan though. So I remember Tim Ferriss said that he generally works to about 4 or 5 questions. Any more than that, it becomes complex. I probably work to a few more than that, and then I have sort of these tabulated little extra bits that are, I guess, you know, brain farts, things that I can bring up if it's relevant, or things that I need to sort of bear in mind as the person's talking. Or that I would like to ensure that they flesh out, because I know listeners would be interested in it as well. Okay, let me see. As I say, yeah, what else? Are there questions I want to ask but refrain from asking? Yes, sometimes. Or I will ask it in a way that drops the subject in there, and I wait to see if they want to go there, and then we can go further. I've just done a very, very difficult podcast with a guest, and it will be running next week. And I, halfway through the interview, realised that some of the questions were going to be too heavy, or at least the answers were going to be too heavy for a lot of people. So I saved them, bunched them up at the end, and I'll be running them in this segment for the paid Substack community. So it's just so that people who really want that content can have access to it, but it's really confronting. So that's the reason for that. Do you prefer to interview in person if logistics permit? Yes, I do. Eye contact, bodily movement, and being able to read people's energy is so important to me. Even the smell of a person is something that can really impact a conversation that I'm having. And again, the delays that I often have make the recording, the virtual recordings, really, really difficult. You mentioned in a recent thread that you are not sure how long the podcast can continue as it costs a lot. What are the main costs? Is it paying guests? No, as I mentioned earlier. What are some ways the listeners can support your podcast? Okay. So the main cost is the producer. He certainly earns his keep. He does a great job. Shout out to Steph. Liana, who works with me, you know, I pay her an hourly rate to support me on all of this. There's an agency that takes a cut of any advertising that I do get, and as does the platform, so Acast. They take the bulk of it, actually. So the each podcast app costs me a couple of $100. So, you know, now that I'm doing two, it's quite a bit. The ads situation, so you probably know that I have those sort of ads that sort of run. They're like just standard like radio ads, and then there's the sponsored ads where I do the read. In both cases, I have quite narrow parameters. I won't do a whole bunch of things, junk food, disposable fashion, obviously anything to do with fossil fuels. I mean, within reason, because everything has something to do with fossil fuels. I've narrowed the parameters quite a lot, but the upside means that if people do partner with me, it generally in that sponsorship, that read out sponsorship thing where I do the reading, it generally means it's a product that I'm happy to endorse. So it gets a double tick from me. And that's, I guess, worth something. Now the problem is that brands in Australia, tend to sponsor male podcasts. They also tend to sponsor podcasts that are cheerful, you know, lots of laughing, lots of celebrity gossip, that kind of thing. There's just not a lot of support from brands, any kind of brand, even the sort of consciously minded brands, for women doing meatier conversations. And that's something I've discussed with a number of podcasters elsewhere in the world. It's fairly consistent. So, you know, I've had, I think, close on 1.5 million downloads. I have a rating of 4.9, which I think is, I'm very proud of, and 620 or 630 reviews. So thank you for all of you listening who have contributed to those. Yeah, it's interesting. I think that the problem I have is that I think brands in general, and I used to find this in a number of forums, think that anyone, a female who's an activist, it's sort of like a hobby. You sort of do it on the side, you do it because you love it, you know, a little bit like a knitting group or something. I've been on panels. Right, panels organized by environmental groups, climate action groups with money, where there's three men and me, and all the men were paid and I was not. That's happened on several occasions. And I've spoken to women in the US who podcast, and you know, people like Krista Tippett, she relies on philanthropic funding, so from a benefactor. So I know a number of you have asked, you know, how you might be able to help. Well, I suppose if you are in the marketing department of a like-minded brand and you'd like to perhaps think about partnering and doing a sort of a sponsorship arrangement, please reach out. That'd be wonderful. I'm not great at dealing with money stuff, so it's something that I find difficult to manage, but it's a catch-22, right, because I need to pay for this so that I can keep it going. Yeah, so it's a tricky one. It's a really tricky one. And as I say, I do have parameters. You know, I won't throw out sponsored ads about cheap and nasty things that I don't think the planet needs. But the flip side is that if you are a legitimate brand with a great message, I'm pretty good at selling them in. So anyway, that's that. I don't want to turn this into a marketing outreach, but also, you know, it's one of the catch-22s that I face as well. And I'll do this small reach out if you don't mind. Having good video production on podcasts is actually really key, and everyone talks about it. And the podcasts that do well are generally those that have the high quality video production. They've got investors or somebody who's able to pay for that, and then it can go up on TikTok and YouTube, and that's when you get real traction. I don't have such funds or expertise at the moment. So I guess what I could say is, if you are somebody who's got some spare time and that is your expertise and you would like to, I don't know, help out, contribute, that could be fun. I would be certainly interested. I think the best idea is if I open up a thread on Substack. So go to sarahwilson.substack.com, and I'll put it out to the community. If you've got ideas, if you would like to be an intern, doing sort of the video stuff, or perhaps even doing designing, I don't know, some crazy, wild, clever social media assets, that would be awesome. I'm well versed in working with young people with crazy ideas who like to take what I do and fuck it up. I love it. I love seeing what people can create, and I'm open to it. So if you are great at fuckuppery, please do feel free to contact me. You can do that in the comments thread here, or in the thread that I'll start on ideas for keeping this podcast alive. I'll have to make a decision on it all fairly soon. I'm finding it super hard financially to be paying to be doing this podcast, as much as I love it. Anyway, I hope, Kai, I've answered your questions. I'm happy to answer further questions in the comments thread over at Substack. So if you're listening to this on Apple or Spotify, I'm over there. And for those of you who are watching the video, you can probably see that's sort of Paris. That's outside my apartment. This is my very messy apartment. And down there you can see all the bits of paper that I work to, bits of paper on the floor as I'm trying to thrash out this next book, which is coming along. Anyway, 20 minutes, that's enough. We will speak again next week. Thanks.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.